Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regularly scheduled January 19th, 2010 board meeting, San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Let me just report out of closed session. We had three items, conference with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation, conference with real property negotiator regarding the Avila school site, and a conference with labor negotiations regarding negotiations with various representatives of the employee groups. The board took no specific action on the items, and it was just reporting. We did have a speaker in open session before we moved to closed session. Laura Finns spoke to the board regarding school nurses. Now, and any change on the order of business, board members? Seeing none, we'll move on. For approval of the minutes, we have a number of sets of minutes. I think it's probably productive to do them one at a time. And thank you for the correction on my last name. So, if anyone want to make a motion?
I'll move approval of the special meeting of December 7th, 2009.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Unger to approve the minutes of December 7th, 2009. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. And I'll move approval of item December 10th, 2009 board meeting. Okay. So we have first by me, second by Mr. Angel. Mark's going to abstain. And Catherine, did you have?
I'm abstaining as well.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. Anybody discussion from anyone?
Wasn't that part two?
But I still think we need to take them one set of minutes at a time.
I just wonder about the abstentions. Were they not there?
You were there. Okay. You're not abstaining. Okay. Well, I know, but I think you just mistook which set of. We had a lot of hearings and a lot of meetings that was the best. So.
Okay.
Are you all right, Meryl?
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Passes 5-0 with one abstention. And. Catherine didn't know. And moving on to the minutes of December 15th. Before we go on too far in this, we also had a couple of items both in closed session on that during that meeting. Am I getting this right? Oh no, I'm sorry. Forget what I said. Minutes of December 15th, 2009. Anybody?
Move.
And we were happy to get that out of the way in time by time for our deadline of January 7th. And then we also had a discussion regarding filling the vacant seat of Mr. Spadafore. Otherwise, any further comments or observations regarding these minutes?
Yeah, I'll move approval.
Okay. Moved by Mrs. Rogers, second by Mr. Angel. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. And then last but not least, the minutes of January 7th, 2010. This board earned its money this month, I'll tell you. So January 7th, 2010. I'll move approval.
I have a correction.
Okay.
I believe under open session it should be Board President Walt Millar as opposed to Board President Roger, meaning Marilyn.
Oh. Oh, I have that on January 7th.
You were you were usurped and didn't realize it.
Oh, I see.
Stealing your thunder.
Thank you. Usurper. Thank you for that correction. I have a motion to approve in Mark seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Now, we are going to have a presentation. Every 15 minutes, a drug and alcohol abuse prevention event at Slo High. And I think Mr. Pruitt is going to take the lead on that. And, oh, maybe not. Whoever.
I think it's at Bay High.
Thank you for fitting us onto your agenda. My name is Kurt Bartlett. I am the faculty advisor for Friday Night Live at San Luis High. And I'm joined by Jen Pantaleo from the County Friday Night Live organization and two students, Julia and Megan, Julia Thulin and Megan Arrigo. And we want to keep this neat, quick and short, so I'm going to let them address and tell you what we're planning with the every 15 minutes.
Hi, we're the president and vice president of Friday Night Live, and basically it's drug and alcohol awareness group on campus, and we're putting on the Every 15 Minutes program, which many of you might be familiar with as it goes through many high schools program. Basically, day one, there's Living Dead, and what we do is we go into we have a uniformed officer and like a counselor or someone, and they go into classrooms and take out someone every 15 minutes. And once that person is removed, an obituary for them is read. And we try to make it as like real as possible to make it like impactful. And then also that day, at lunch, there will be a crash staged on the field, and it has casualties, and one student is pronounced dead, and then two are treated by the paramedics, and one is rushed off in the helicopter. So it's really, really fun.
Well, very eventful.
Very eventful. And then after the crash, the drunk driver, he is booked in the county jail, and like we make a video recording of this, and.
And that night, we have a retreat for the living dead and the people in the car accident, and we go and they have people talk to us and explain more in depth about drunk driving and its effects. And then on the second day, we have an assembly for all the students at the school, and they show a video about that has the booking, the 911 call, and like etc. And I think that's it for day two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Question: is the drunk driver a student?
Yes, they have to be over 18 because they have to go to the county jail and like get fingerprinted and everything for the video.
But everyone in the crash is a student.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Okay, it's a powerful program.
I just really want to thank you because, as you know, we've spent a lot of time, or maybe you don't know, but the board has spent a lot of time this year looking at this exact issue of student drug use and alcohol use, and what you're going to do in one day will touch a lot of lives and save a lot of lives. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, and for the records, it's March 25th and 26th. It's the 2 days before the spring break at Slo High.
So the students who are the living dead, are they go about their regular schedule? Or?
No, after they're pulled out of class at like 15-minute intervals, they're taken out and no one sees them for the rest of the day or night. They don't go home to their parents. They go to the retreat at a hotel, nearby hotel.
Wow. Yes?
I think I get it, but can you just for the public...
Every 22 minutes, but we just don't change the name of the program.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate the presentation.
Thank you.
Now we're going to move on to a very special moment on the agenda when we're going to embarrass an old colleague. We're going to ask Dr. Valentine to handle that.
So. I'm an old colleague, too, so I want to make sure. I don't know how many of you folks have read Tom Sawyer, but there's a scene in there where Tom and Huck get to attend their own funeral and get kind of choked up at the things that are said about them. I'm thinking John may be having a similar experience as we move forward. I just wanted to take a moment here to express thanks on behalf of San Luis Coastal to John Spadafore, who will be stepping down and has stepped down from our school board. in order to pursue some personal business interests. I think in a political world, it's a refreshing moment to see folks who come forward, and I think school boards are probably the most exemplary of this. People who come forward with no other agenda than to serve. In the years that I've known John, our kids attended high school, San Luis Obispo High School, in the same years. And I look back at those times, and I think the first time I ever saw John was actually when I was functioning as a parent, and seeing John as the president of the Black and Gold Club at San Luis Obispo High School. Again, no agenda except to help kids and to serve the school community. John moved on and became an integral part of Dr. Steve Ladd's administration as he was superintendent. John served on the superintendent's advisory committee. He headed up a group of folks to explore the possibility of a parcel tax in the San Luis Coastal School District. He provided very valuable advice during very, very difficult times to our school district and to the superintendent at that time. John volunteered to be considered as a personnel commissioner to deal with questions of fairness regarding classified employees in the San Luis Coastal School District, and served as the board's representative on the personnel commission, and provided that kind of wisdom and even-handed perspective that kind of work takes over and over again. John was first appointed to the board and subsequently elected to the Board of Education and has served since 2005, actually, in that capacity. I think if we take a look at what John has contributed to us over those years, I think the largest contribution among many huge contributions to the school district has been that anchoring of all of us in common sense, and I guess I would add uncommon common sense. John brought to every issue that came forward. His perspective was always the well-being of all children. He was a champion of the efforts that we have made to close the achievement gap. He's also passionate about the arts, and very important to him that those opportunities be brought and shared to the children of our community. We have some things, John, for you, and maybe I could ask you to come forward right now. And I'm not exactly sure what order to go in, but I think I'll start with the plaque, because nobody is truly gone until they have a plaque. So,
at least it's not fixed to a tombstone yet.
Well, this does have that obituary feel to it. I would read for the public, though. Presented in grateful appreciation to John Spadafore, January 19th, 2010, for his service to the students, staff, and community. As a trustee of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education, November 2005 through January 2010. Served as board clerk June 2005 through December 2007, and board president December 2007 through December 2008. So, John, we hope you'll keep that
Thank
as
you.
A remembrance of your time here, but we're not
Thank
done
you.
Yet.
Thank you.
Secondly, this actually, I think, has sort of a double feel to it, because it not only expresses our appreciation, but it clears a spot on the wall in the district office as well. This was, we have pictures.
Thank you. Don't forget to turn the timer on. The words were so kind, and I appreciate that very much, Dr. Valentine. The 20 years or so that I've been actively involved, and although I'm going to continue, hopefully, in some capacity, has shown me so much about the character of the people here in the district, starting with the people who greet the students in the morning, the people who help with the facilities to keep them clean and that the students feel good about being here, with the teachers that I've seen in classrooms even when I was a classroom assistant helping with reading and math, and in later situations when we would go on field trip with our children. Those people who have day-to-day contact with the students are the most incredible people in the world, and really all we do, and it's such an honor, is just find the ways to support them even better. We have an administration that I think is second to none in terms of managing the assets of this district and helping the students on a consistent basis, and I think all the parents of this community have to feel that if there's one thing that their children will always have, is a loving, caring, supportive, well-administered district in a situation where you want your children to be cared for and to learn to the best of their ability, and I think that's what we have. The Personnel Commission that I was involved with for 3 years works on a merit system, which underscores the relationship that the classified employees have with this district in terms of their employment and the method in which they're recognized and paid, and I think that underscores the fact that this is such a supportive district relative to the people who give their time and energy day in and day out. And I would like to finally say that the members of the board that I have been honored to be with the last 4.5 years have always brought such a wonderful, diverse, deep background to the issue of public education because you all care. And I think that background and the fact that you care so much will never abandon you. And the key to all this has been your ability to listen to the people who bring information, whether it be administration or the public and each other. And the integration, I think, of what you all bring, plus the fact that you care and that you want the best to take place, is something that we can all be proud of. So I thank all of you for the support, for the partnership, and I enjoy all those years and look forward to whatever the future brings. Thank you very much, and thank you, Doctor.
I'd just like to add to Dr. Ballantyne's eloquent statement that John always brought a calming influence to issues that were being pretty hotly debated at times, and he was a voice of reason, and I trust he'll continue to be a voice of reason and comfort during difficult times, and I'm going to miss him. And if any other board members would like to make a comment, please indicate. Otherwise, we could go eat some cake. John said only 10 minutes, though, because he knows the board has a full agenda. So why don't we take a short break, have some cake, congratulate John on his service, and we'll reconvene in 10 minutes. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. That was enjoyable. It was also the shortest board meeting that Mr. Spadafore has been to in a long time. So we will move on to the next item on the agenda, which is correspondence. And I am pleased to report on two items of correspondence, one from Tammy Gunther, who is a fine individual and a trustee with the Tascadero Unified School District, and it is a glowing recommendation for our own Mr. Buckman as the CSBA Region 9 candidate. And then also another glowing recommendation from Georgie O'Connor, who is perhaps the most senior school board trustee in the county and probably a pretty good portion of the state as well. She is with the Lucia Marr Unified School District, and it's a very high praise for Mr. Buckman.
If I can.
Please.
I'd just like to thank the board here for their unqualified support. And also I was very surprised because while we were doing our voting, I heard from CSBA that I also was nominated by Coast Union School District. So I'm going into this with the support of two school boards. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Let's see. Now we will move to public comment. And public comment is a chance for folks to address the board on any subject. If normally we would prefer that if it's an agendized item that you hold your comments until that time, but if that's not convenient for you to do so, you're...
Mo McGee couldn't be here, but she sends her regards. I'm here on behalf of our team to give you a quick update on our school health program, which we manage here in the district. You each have a packet. Healthy Children Learn Better. Second page shows many of the activities that we school nurses do. Third page shows the many requirements that we meet in order to be a school nurse. And together, we four nurses have 95 years of valuable, varied nursing experience, which provides the important base for our school nurse practice. Maureen and I have completed the 26 units of post-baccalaureate education for our credential, and Joan and Margaret are following our tradition. They're enrolling in a school nurse credentialing program. I say tradition because in my 11 years, every nurse we have hired has gotten their credential in this manner, partly because credentialed school nurses are scarce. If you go to the next page, there's five areas that we operate in that empower children to be healthy so they can benefit from their education. And since we've got 3 minutes here, trying to see where to cut down. We do a lot of work in the health room, identifying problems and helping kids get back into class. We develop care plans so students can be safe in class and educate the teachers about those care plans. And the next page shows a summary of the student health care concerns where we identify the students that need care plans. We have over 7,000 students. We have almost 1,000 students with health issues. Parents inform us of these. Our special needs kids is a population that many times has... are medically fragile and have more complicated care plans. We have 34 students with epinephrine pens for life-threatening allergies, and we make care plans with the parents and the teachers to keep them safe at school. We have 33 students with seizure disorder, and three of them have orders for Diastat, which is a medication that might be administered on a rare chance that they had a seizure, and this must be given by a licensed person. We have 22 diabetics, and half of or 10 of them are at K through 5th grade level. They require a little more monitoring and supervision. Four diabetics were newly diagnosed this school year and are learning about their health problem. The next page is health screening statistics summary, all the various screenings that we set up and carry out, and we refer those who have further follow-up needs to various programs and organizations that we keep ourselves apprised of. Healthy students learn better. School nurses provide valuable expertise to help them be successful in the classroom, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was an amazing presentation. You packed
We're
a lot
We're passionate
of
about our work. We could have gone on for longer.
But you were concise, and we appreciate it, and we appreciate the information. Thank you all.
You're welcome.
Any other requests for public comment?
Yes, we do have Fayla Chapman.
Good evening. I'm Fayla Chapman. I'm here tonight as representative for Los Osos Middle School and their science fair that is going to be held in a couple of weeks. And I've given all of you an invitation. I want to invite the entire public. Am I over time already? I want to invite the public to come. It's January 29th, and it goes from 6:30 to 8 in the Los Osos Middle School cafeteria. The science teachers over at the middle school have worked very hard to help their students develop and perform experiments and then produce science boards for everybody to see. We will start the judging for them. This is a judged fair, and we start judging with science professionals. I have student teachers. I have high school science students coming in to judge them. We give first, second, and third prizes to both the 7th and the 8th grade students. And then on Thursday night, we will have all of them on display, and we'll have an awards ceremony at 7:15. And we also have a fundraiser going on for Trout in the Classroom, And this is where the seventh grade teachers raise trout from eggs, and then they release them out into the wild after they've gotten to a certain length. And we do the fundraiser to help pay for the eggs every year. So we invite you and any of the public who's interested in coming to come and enjoy finding out what's going on in the world of science. Thank you.
Thank you, Phelan. Okay. And no other requests at this point. We don't have any other requests to address the board. Is there anyone who would like to address the board on an item or an item that's not on the agenda who has not turned in? You can just come on forward if you would. Okay, seeing no one, we will move on to the reports by student representatives. And Sandra Sanchez is our intrepid student representative who made it here through the storm. Sandra.
Good evening. Okay. First, I'm going to talk about our mock trial team. Our rounds are actually starting now. We're actually starting to compete against schools. Our first one will be held here in the county court on January 30th at 1 p.m., and it's going to be a Saturday. Our second one will be held on February 2nd, and that'll be a Tuesday, and that's going to be against Arroyo Grande at 6 p.m. Our third one will be on February 3rd, and it will be a Wednesday, and it'll be against Nipomo, and that'll be at 6 p.m. as well. And our fourth one will be on a Thursday, on February 4th, and it'll be at 6 p.m. as well, and it'll be against Coast Union, and those will all be held at the county court here in SLO. I will also talk about our YSTEM program, which is our career exploration program. 10 students having this program completed, and they're going to have the ceremony held on this Wednesday at 1:30 at Pacific Beach. And we will also, next semester, Ms. Jacobson will be the teacher for our art class, and there will be a student representative, a guest artist with the support. And then thanks to the Teach Grant, and Ms. Coiner will be teaching a ROP electronic media class. And right now, our life science is dissecting rats. And that's it.
Thank you. Also a good preparation for mock trial. And I just want to say, not that I want to get into a battle with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, but Pacific Beach and Sandra just really smoked slow high the other day in scrimmage. So just I say. Anyway, Sandra, thanks very much for your report, and
you're
feel
welcome.
Free to take off whenever you need to.
Thank you.
But if you want to stick around and let us know your thoughts on things, we're welcoming that too. Okay. Thanks a lot. Okay. Bye. Thanks, Sandra. We'll get an educational service. Oh, any other school staff or administrators who would like to comment on anything? All right. And Dr. Matakovich, educational services update.
Thank you, President Millar. I'd like to say that we're off to a good start in the new year. And I'd like to, before I summarize some of the things that are going on this month, I'd like to thank our nurses who are present tonight for the work that they did in terms of coordinating the school-based clinics that occurred throughout our district. In a short amount of time, they rallied the services of the community together to be able to provide these clinics for our children. And I just want to say a fine professional group of nurses who have tentacles across the whole county, and we were able to accomplish a job, and I want to thank them very much. It was a very strong community service. Thank you. And so this week we are, courtesy of Instructional Services, completing our elementary in-services in the comprehensive literacy model. We're working on our assessment plans as well as our read-aloud strategies. It's very exciting to see the application of these strategies in our classrooms, K-6. We're promoting reading across the grade levels. And if you have a moment, this for the next 2 days, we're continuing our upper grade in-service. You're welcome to attend. It's here in this room, so join us if you can. I'd like to thank our Cal Poly partnership, courtesy of Dr. Anita Hernandez, who's coordinated a full day with Gaysu Pinnell, who's the leader in reading recovery, internationally renowned. She will be coming Saturday for a full-day workshop, and our teachers, along with the Cal Poly student teachers, will spend the full day with her learning new strategies and techniques. We're very excited about this unique opportunity, especially in conjunction with the student teaching program at Cal Poly. So our teachers are bringing their books and resources, and the student teachers will be sitting amongst our teachers and learning a lot. So our program is really an articulated piece, and again, I want to thank the School of Education for the partnership and for sponsoring Gaysu Pinnell. Tonight we have Tina Lucas, our teacher on special assignment. She's here to share a brief overview of our beginning teacher program. Thanks to Tina, we're providing our new teachers with the support they need to be successful. So, Tina, if you would.
Thank you. Good evening. This year, the BITSA program has a total of 34 participating teachers. We're very lucky this year in that we have brought on adult school teachers. We, if they are in a certain category providing services to seniors, there's special funding that they receive for their class from the state, and therefore they can qualify to go through a designated subject credential program. The induction teachers, who are the K-6 teachers participating in the BITSA program, there are 24 of those this year, 5 special ed, 2 preschool, 1 special ed multiple subject. She's getting her special ed credential as well as her multiple subject credential at the high school. 1 special ed at the high school, just getting the special ed credential, and a program specialist, Julie Kragenbrink, is completing the induction program. There are 7 single subject secondary teachers and 12 multiple subject elementary school teachers, which includes a K-6 music teacher. The BITSA program for the first year, in the induction piece, the teachers work on context, learning about the school culture, the instructional materials, and the context of the classroom situation and creating an effective environment. The second year, the teachers work on equity issues, universal access for all students. The designated subject credential teachers, those being the adult ed, we have 9 adult ed teachers going through a 1-year program to get a designated subject credential. This work is done with Sally Ames and I mentoring and working as field supervisors for these teachers, but they're completing the program through Ventura County Office of Education. Ventura has written a program and has been certified by the state to be able to do this. We have 1 teacher going through getting a career technical education credential, ROP, at Morro Bay High in Auto Shop. So the total of 34 teachers participating this year makes for a very busy year, but we're thrilled that the adult ed teachers are able to get their work completed here in this county instead of driving to Ventura 7 times a year on a Saturday to work for completing that credential. Questions you might have? Okay. Thank you very much.
Just 1 quick question.
Yes.
So 34 BITS teachers, is that a much larger group than we've ever had before?
It is, in that because we have brought on the 10 extra adult ed teachers, actually 9 adult ed, because the designated subject credential teacher, who is an ROP, have always been serviced by our county. The adult ed piece is new, so we're hoping to be able to address their needs here rather than the extended trip back and forth. Thank you.
And what additional things can an adult ed teacher do once they have that certification?
They are certified to teach the special classes. Okay. In order to be able to teach in those special classes that receive kind of like an ADA funding for those classes, mainly adult seniors,
right.
They can continue to teach in that category. There are adult ed teachers whose classes are totally funded by participants paying for enrollment.
Right.
But this is a very special category.
Okay. Thank you, Tina.
Thank you.
Mary?
Thank you. And just 1 more thing. We have a very unique donation that was made by our team to our classrooms on behalf of our students, and our Director of Student Services is happy to share this team effort. Jackie Kurt Martinez, please.
Good evening, Board. As Dr. Matakovich was saying, tonight's educational update for our Student Services is a bit unique. As you recall, the district had a long-term goal of developing a preschool center, which would meet the needs of our 3 to 5-year-old students in our community. The first year of operation is in full swing, and it's been several of our bucket list fulfillments. Children are flourishing at the center. There are requirements of lots of different materials and equipment so that their developmental growth can continue hard at work. There's a little bit of a special story or presentation tonight, and it touches not only our community agencies and our students, but our staff as well. Our school psychologist, our preschool school psychologist, Sharon Corcoran, who's here tonight, found a lovely yet rather rusty tricycle at a special treasure sale, and she had a vision to have it cleaned up, to add some paint and make it kind of look new again, and the children would have a nice large trike to ride. Sharon passed this wonderful task on to, collaboratively, onto Art Martinez, who sought out some community businesses. The three businesses came together. Spencer P.C. Gray, who's the owner of the Chop Shop, and I'd like all three of them to come forward, with his co-worker, John Diaz. Also, the Powder Pros and Cars Pinstriping. So together, they turned this once lonely, rusty tricycle into a beautiful, well-structured trike. They took it all apart, sanded it, powder-coated it, painted it, and pinstriped it. So they, together as a group, put this together. Sharon, Art, and Spencer would like to present this beautiful, one-of-a-kind trike to our preschool teachers who are unable to be here tonight because they are a little bit under the weather. And we have two wonderful special education paraeducators, Miss Pam, who is known by the students, Pam/Jones, and also Miss Judy, Miss Icavelli, to come and accept this donation on behalf of the community and the school psychologist. Can we get a group in this? Do you mind?
Wow.
Thank you.
Okay, your turn. That's wonderful. It was actually a family that was stepping down on the CMR, and the daughter, just from my experience with county office, kind of knew the family, saw their yard sale, and I recognized that looks like a special ed trike. And so I talked to the father and the daughter. It never fit right for her because there's CP in her legs, scissoring and stuff. And so it never really got used, but they stored it outside. So I figured, we can use it as a tool. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your work on this project and creativity. It's nice to see something so unique that's going to be used again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, and now that we've had an uplifting, inspirational moment, Mr. Miller, what's going on with the state budget?
Thank you. And, well, don't have anything uplifting to say at the moment. What we did find is, since our last meeting, is the governor has come out with his recommendations of what the 2010-2011 budget would look like. After making a promise not to or to protect education, he has proposed a $1.5 billion increase in the takeaways that he initiated in his very first term. In keeping with his broken promises of Prop 98 protection and other such things, a one-time allocation to the school districts of $250 per student that was supposed to end in 2009-2010 has been continued under a new name, And its new name is that it's a cut in administrative costs that districts are going to be asked to make in terms of $201 per student. For San Luis Coastal, our known takeaways by the state for 2010-2011 are going to be $2.8 million, which is our fair share of the revenue limit that will be deficited for revenue limit districts. Revenue limit districts are now at 18.355% of their expected allocation, and our share of that is $2.8 million. In addition to that, the $201 per student will roughly translate to about $1.4 million for a total of $4.2 million that in some form or another, as a basic aid district, we'll be giving back to the state either as a combination of categorical programs, lottery, class size reduction, any type of instructional materials, any type of money that we receive from the state, combinations thereof, we probably will have to cobble together some givebacks. The consensus of opinion is that this isn't the end of it all, that this is just a conversation starter and a weak one at that. The President Pro Tem of the State Senate, Steinberg, has termed Arnold Schwarzenegger's budget proposal as a joke. Brings to mind the idea that there is a lot of things not to laugh about in this whole issue. The continued takeaways from education continue to cause extreme upset to children and throughout the state in all districts. So we look forward to a more constructive process, perhaps. I think that there's a lot of knowledge being shared with the legislature about the depth and pain that cuts to education have caused districts throughout the state. So perhaps it's finally time for them to listen and understand what our problems are. We'll see. We'll just have to continue to be patient and report what we know as it becomes available for us.
Thank you. Any board questions for Mr. Miller? Okay. Well, that was a roller coaster ride. Let's see. We'll move on to approval of the 2010-2011 instructional calendar. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. In front of the board tonight is a proposal for the 2010-2011 instructional calendar for the school district. As you know, the calendar is a negotiated item between the Board of Education and the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Had the opportunity to share board interests with the Teachers Association, and they have had an independent vote, and the calendar that they are putting forward is the one that's attached to the agenda item. You have both a black and white and color version, I believe, in your book. It's the same calendar, just two different, just a color version in addition. I think the salient feature of the calendar is, once again, the teachers are proposing a two-week spring break for the last 2 weeks of April, as similar to what is happening this year. It's for the board to discuss, and if acceptable, I would ask that you go ahead and accept the calendar. Or if you have concerns or want revisions, then to let me know, and we'll be meeting once again with SLCTA to discuss those concerns.
Okay. Mark?
Once again, I do have some concerns with the two-week vacation. First of all, I'm concerned that there's new opportunity for parental input into this process, and I'm concerned again whether we're going to be forcing a conflict with Cuesta and Cal Poly summer programs. So.
If I can just address the summer programs, the calendar, I'm not aware of the Cuesta summer school for 2011 yet, but I can pretty accurately predict that they will probably begin that third week in June, the week of June 13th, if they do what they've done in the past, which would present an overlap with our school calendar. It's happened before. It's happened even when we haven't had a spring break, and usually at the high school level, that's worked out by a alteration of final exam schedules so that students can do that. But I could predict that that would occur again with this calendar.
Phil?
The calendar as presented does present a concern for parents, especially our working families. One of the things I would like the administration to do going forward is if we could add to our parental satisfaction survey just a question on how satisfied our parents are with the instructional calendar. I get a sense that many of them are not satisfied with the two-week spring break.
Marilyn?
Yeah, I have the same concerns with this calendar as I had with the previous calendar, which are really twofold. One having to do with what Mr. Angel just expressed, the hardship that's placed on parents for child care. And the other having to do with where the 2 weeks fall and how that impacts the testing window for state testing. If there is enough time for teachers to review and prepare their students for doing a good job on the tests and being calm and ready. But that's, I guess, for the classroom teacher to decide if they believe that they have adequate time to do that and their children will perform well. I have to believe that they took that into consideration when they made this vote. So those are my two concerns with the two-week spring calendar. Thank you.
Catherine.
I would just like to say that it is regrettable that we have to approve this calendar for the following year without having experienced what some of these effects will be of the calendar this year. So, Mr. Robinette, if you could explain why we must do that at this point in time, that'd be helpful.
Well, it's in our contract, for one thing. We have a contractual clause that says that the calendar will be put forward by December 15th of each year, and it actually was put forward by December 15th. We just didn't have a board meeting besides all those ones you approved the minutes for, not a regular board meeting until today. So it's in contract that this will be determined each year by December 15th. But there's also a real practical consideration. We are getting literally every day phone calls from the public about next year's calendar. People are trying to plan their vacations, figure out when school is starting, schedule trips and timeshares and all those kinds of things. And so to wait till April or May to just do the calendar for that following year is probably impractical from our public's perspective.
Okay, any further comment? Any public comment? Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
I think in light of the comments that Rick just made in terms of the public needing to know what's going on, I would move adoption of this calendar.
I'll second. Any board comment? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. Chris, did you want to make a comment? I didn't want to cut you off.
I realize all of these things are important, and giving this due consideration, I don't believe I can vote yes for the calendar, although I understand everything else, and I will support the two-week calendar.
Okay, so you were a no.
I'm voting no. I couldn't vote yes with my holding my nose the way I felt I would have had to have held it.
So. Okay. So then it passes 5-1. Okay. Thank you, Rick. Mm-hmm. Next is the item number 5, extended day activities for middle school.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight, Diane Frost, principal of Laguna Middle School, and Terry Elfrink, principal of Los Osos Middle School, are here to give you an update in terms of the discussions that they've had at their school site level relative to middle school extended day activities. If you'll remember, this is an offshoot of their presentation that they made earlier to you this year relative to accelerated learner opportunities at the middle school. So they have surveyed their students, their staff, talked with their site councils, and they're here tonight to give you an overview of what they've learned as a result of those conversations. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Matakovich, very much. Diane Frost, principal of Laguna Middle School.
Terry Alfrink, Los Osos Middle School.
And we're very pleased to be here. As Dr. Matakovich said in her background, this is a second discussion of extended opportunities for our students. In October of 2009, Dr. Alfrink and I were able to work with the Board of Education on a discussion about the offerings that we have for our accelerated students on campus. We talked about curricular and co-curricular opportunities currently available, but then also talked about the need for all students and not just exclusively accelerated students at this point to have the opportunity for participation in after-school activities.
If you recall, we also talked about the benefits of after-school opportunities were discussed, including the ability to engage students who may not otherwise connect to their school, enrich or remediate curriculum, expose students to activities not otherwise available to them either at home, at school, or out in the community. We also felt that these help motivate and feed the curiosity. When we talk about how we defined accelerated student, we kind of hooked that term onto the curiosity and the passions of students, and this is part of it, that this would be programs that would kind of hook that also and feed that curiosity. And we explored in the academic program and augment the curricular program. You, the board, asked us to go ahead and explore the feasibility of offering an after-school opportunities for middle school level students. Information regarding the feasibility of offering such programs to our middle school students was gathered through the following venues. We first, both schools surveyed students regarding their interests and availability, and we have the data from that. We both talked to the school site councils, and that includes parents, teachers, and students to get their feedback. And the conversation was about the opportunity and about the feasibility of it, but also what is their interest, what's their interest as a community. And then staff and our management team discussions were held at faculty meetings for these options. This was a sample of our survey. We just kind of purged a number of different kinds of clubs and activities or possibly old activities that we used to offer at schools. And then we also asked our students to kind of give an idea of what their availability would be during the week, the days, and then also the times. Next slide. So survey results. The entire student body at Los Osos and a huge portion of Laguna were surveyed. The most popular opportunities were arts and crafts, fantasy leagues, if you have kids nowadays, even the adults, fantasy leagues, mock trial for Sandra and for Walt, and we might get Mr. Spadafore back out here to work on the mock trial. Surprisingly, that was a huge number of eighth graders, so they must have siblings who have been involved in it, and that was it's a good testimony of that activity. Movies clubs was huge. Video animation club, drama club, game clubs, those were more the tabletop game clubs, ping pong, that you would find at a rec center type thing, but also actual game, board games and that type of stuff. Model building club, pottery ceramics club, and woodworking club.
As you might have seen in the survey in the last slide, we asked our students exactly when they would be available for something like this. We offered them 3 to 4, 4 to 5, 5 to 6, 6 to 7, and they really chose the 3 to 4 p.m. hour directly after school as wanting to participate in a program such as this. But looking at number 3, you'll notice that our feedback told us that our kids are busy. Our next question asked them exactly what they're currently involved in. Many are involved in community sports, dancing, martial arts, and our own homework club and math labs that we currently offer after school. Some of them relate that they are not available for these opportunities that we might be able to offer after school. Some of them would be, though. That was the feedback we got from our students through the student survey. At our school site council...
Diane, let me just ask you a quick question. So would that... I noticed the lack of academic stuff in the list. And is that because students were already in homework club or math club wouldn't necessarily list that as a preferred activity?
We didn't offer on our survey homework club and math lab, but we did offer things like a writing club, I think, was on there. I think science club was on there.
Right.
And at this first blush, the kids did not choose that as one of their top choices. They were really more interested in the arts and crafts, video production, that type of thing. So a little bit different direction.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. So, again, that was what our students told us. Our school site councils, as Dr. Elfrink said, also discussed this. And then just to remind you, at the middle school level, our school site councils are composed of teachers from the campus, administrators, parents from the community, and eighth grade students. So we really have a representative group at our school site councils, and they were positive about these opportunities. They did have some questions. We were still, you know, discussing exactly how this could move forward. They had questions remaining regarding funding source, participation rates, and we discussed our ability to hire personnel to create and implement the classes because that's time intensive as well. Our staffs also discussed this opportunity for our kids, and they did see the value in such programs being offered to our students. Our management teams discussed this. It might have been the entire staffs or interested staff members came forward. They are middle school teachers. They understand the middle school philosophy, and they see the value of these types of programs after school, but they also had some concerns. Pay, wages, and funding, the ability of our already overscheduled students to be available for the courses, and the reality of our teachers finding the time to create and supervise the mini courses that we're discussing.
So we came to the pros and cons, and so we're going to start with the cons first so we leave you with the pros. Obviously, the one con is the funding sources are limited and must be identified, and just listening to Mr. Miller, we know those funds are going to be tight. Planning for an effective program would be a labor-intense. A coordinator is necessary for the success of this program, one to develop the program, but also the main job of coordinating the matching curriculum, but also recruiting not only the teaching staff, but also if there are outside members of the community who would be working with us. To recruit that, it's a full-time job almost. Limited certificated teachers are available. The liability and supervision issues exist when considering volunteer instructors, particularly in things like woodshop classes and things like that, where there would be that additional physical liability. Our students are busy. Their availability is not certain, although, again, we were looking at the initial question was accelerated, but we've also looked at equal access for all students and having that motivational hook that for at-risk students. I think if you look at the demographics of the at-risk versus the students who are involved, the students involved are probably doing better in school. And so part of that group that we demographically want to look at are at-risk students, and that's really what a program like this would certainly, I think, motivate potentially. And then availability of experts from the community, unknown and difficult to recruit.
And then, of course, there are many, many advantages to a program such as this. Wonderful extension opportunities would be available for our students. Such a program could increase the connection of our most at-risk students to their school, exactly what Dr. Elfrink was just talking about. The middle school philosophy of exploration and hands-on learning would be supported by the program. An opportunity to foster a connection to our local community would be created if we were able to get experts from the community to come to our campuses to provide these mini courses. That would be a wonderful connection. And then activities that are not available through the school program could be opened up to our students after school. The time in the classroom is tight. There are a lot of standards and benchmarks that have to be presented and certain things that we just don't have time to do in the classroom. After school opportunities such as this open up that type of experience to our students again.
So where are we? Next steps. This is kind of where the reality hit in. We had talked about trying to create ideas of what this after-school program would look like, and as we just started listing, the pros and cons spoke to those. And so our next step, work to ensure that our after-school opportunities become a strategic planning priority. We have the strategic plan. We need to be in some way brought into that cycle. Timing is probably off right now, but we're able to work with that.
Identifying our funding sources is also critical. We do have our single plans for student achievement, and at both schools we really do look at connecting our students to the campuses. So there are funding sources on site for limited implementation if we wanted to do so.
We need to look at a complete cost analysis, and that's a tough one because it depends on how it would be configured. And we talk in terms of mini courses. We talk in terms of maybe a 10-week, one day a week after school type of program, or is it 2 days a week for 5 weeks? Is it 8 days straight? You know, there's a lot of configuration questions. But with that comes in the cost analysis of how many hours are we paying a community member or a staff member to be there teaching that. So cost analysis is huge.
We'd have to secure the staff to teach the courses and activities, and as we've talked about throughout the presentations, that certificated staff from our campuses would be best case, but also volunteers from the community if we can make it through some of the legal and fingerprinting issues that we may have.
We'd like to give Rick one more job to do, and that would be to clarify contractual issues for that extra duty pay. So again, it's not only our teachers, but it's also how do we pay then folks who are coming in from the community? What's reasonable?
And then, of course, streamlining the protocol for securing volunteer positions, if at all possible.
Again, going back to the configuration and what each different class would look like, determine the guidelines or expectations for content, the number of meetings, the minimum number of students that would qualify to be paid for a position, and also the curricular questions of how does it link to an extension of the science program or the English program, whatever it has to do with the curricular content.
And if we decide that we want to implement a full program for our students, year-long courses throughout the year, we would need to create that coordinator position so that it could truly be effective. And then finally, our thoughts are at this point that we would identify a pilot course for each site, implement that course sometime in the spring of this year, and then assess the effectiveness of the program with the idea of expansion based on what we find out in this pilot course.
Kevin.
Wow, you guys have exceeded my expectations for how this could be handled. You've been very thorough with figuring out what is needed and what we're desiring, but also following it through with some proposals, and I love your short fuse. That's a great way to go about that. Thank you very much. That's a lot of hard work. As you well know, this is a priority of the Obama administration, is to keep the lights on after school in schools, and the exact reason for that is because it does enhance all students' performance in school and their behavior and their connection to the school, and I think that's why we want to continue moving this ball forward, and I hope that we could do that as early as spring 2010. In terms of just one thing I want to throw out there for funding, this is also something that I hope that we can partner with the city and the county, all cities, Morro Bay, Los Osos, San Luis Obispo, because in many ways when we start bringing in our most at-risk learners, we help the community as well. We keep those children in a supervised environment. We help their parents who can continue working without being having the distraction of are their children being cared for. And then we don't have our latchkey kids, you know, on the streets. So hopefully among all the various solutions we look at, we can also look at partnering with some of our other government entities.
Chris?
So what would you think the board's role in supporting you could be at this time?
I know that's a difficult that's a difficult question at this point, especially when we spend part of our meeting talking about, you know, the budget of the state of California and how we're funding everything else in the schools. Obviously, if we were to move forward with something, you know, on a year-long basis where we have multiple courses after school and certificated teachers or even volunteers and materials fees and that type of thing, we'd love a little help on identifying funding sources.
And it might also be potentially release time just to begin the conversation of what configuration, how would it really practically look, because we all have our own ideas on an after-school woodshop or an after-school rocket lab or something like that. So it may just be talking further with interested staff members on what they potentially would want to propose. Right now, what we've left out there is to staff members, because we want to pilot at least one at each school, come up with a proposal, and we've left it wide open. And so how many meetings, what their outcomes are for the educational component of that might be, we're leaving that open so the staff can kind of create their own and bring it to us. So it might be that kind of planning time.
Marilyn?
Thank you. I am also very impressed with all the effort you put in and what you brought forward. I have a couple of questions. For the homework club and the math lab, do we have a late bus?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We do.
So that children who chose to participate in these types of activities could be accommodated on that bus?
Yes.
Transportation is not a problem. Okay. And then, Dr. Matakovich, do we have someone on staff who works in whole or in part on grant proposals?
No, we do not. We all take a stab at it and identify areas. And in fact, we did look at the after-school grant program through the state and the federal government, and the qualifying factor was that we needed to have a population of 50% or more free and reduced lunch kids on campus, and we're just... Our district is at 30% at this time, but we're just not there at these sites. However, that doesn't mean that we won't be looking forward to when we might qualify for such a grant. Okay. So we have our eyes and ears open. Since I'm speaking, could I just add one thing, Mr. President? What's very important to us is for this to come from the school site, from the staff, from the kids, so it's a kind of a grassroots situation, and that both principals are willing to work through a pilot course at each of their schools, work out the logistics, see how it flies, what the ups and downs are, and to see if we've really got something that we can develop. I think that the support to allow them to take that step and to be part of the strategic planning conversation, I think, is a really big step. And we appreciate you listening to this and providing us this opportunity.
Go ahead, Ms.
So then I guess I would ask, I know among your many assignments, yours or Mr. Miller's, could you investigate any sources of funding that we might currently have that would allow us to pilot one course at each school?
We have funding sources that can fund anything we want. That sounds like an expansive statement. It's just a matter of deciding that's what we want to do with the funds. That said, there are also site resources that can go into these, and we would look into those as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mark?
Thank you, sir. I also am impressed, but I'm most impressed at the level of the involvement of the students. It's just amazing that they keep coming forward and they have all these great ideas. I did talk to Mary last week because I met with a Cal Poly club last week, and there's 20 Cal Poly students right now looking for community service, and one of the things we talked about was an extended day. So as soon as you're ready, we'll put you in touch with them. And since September, when we did the drug and alcohol workshop, I've stayed in touch with Probation Chief Jim Salio and Juvenile Court Judge and several of the others, and each one of them continues to stress with me the need for these after-school programs and what they see as the children coming out into their world. And so this is going to be wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. I appreciate, like all the other board members, the amount of work you guys put into it. One of the things I notice about living in the community is there's not a lot of stuff going on community-wise for our students. Our skate park, well, Los Osos skate park is wonderful, but here in town it's not very functional. There's no bowling alley. There's no golf course for our kids, just mini golf or anything that kids like to do after school. So whatever we need to do to support you guys to keep our kids in school later and keep them off the streets is a priority for me.
There's a golf course right next door to Laguna Middle School. It's excellent for kids. I just played badly there last weekend. I think it's a good presentation. I appreciate it. If we went back a few slides, I think the number one thing was set a priority in the strategic plan. That sounds like a board function. I do support us going forward with pilot programs and identifying funding sources for that, but I do think ultimately it's going to be not that it isn't a good idea, it's just that there's a lot of good ideas, and that's what the strategic plan is supposed to parse among. So hopefully we can have that discussion too in the near future, and the pilot programs will give us some more illumination as to where we should go with this. Catherine.
Before we let you go, could I just ask that when you go back to your teachers, I would hope to see some more academic programs in those after-school offerings, in particular in the area of what they call STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, math. That could be done in a fun way, you know, Imagineering kind of classes, but I think we could benefit our students sort of accidentally by getting them involved in those kind of activities. And there was something in the New York Times, I guess, recently about kids who work together as groups on science projects develop a long-term appreciation for science that you can't necessarily get just by working alone. So that'd be a useful endeavor. Thank you again.
Any further board comment? Any public comment on this item? Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
Dr. Valentine, when will we be reviewing and updating the strategic plan?
It's part of the budget process that we'd bring forward in the spring.
So
April
or so?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item 6, which is approval of the 2009-10 consolidated application for funding categorical aid programs, part 2. Rita?
Good evening. Every year, the district submits Part 1 and Part 2 of the consolidated application as a requirement of our district accepting federal and state categorical funds. This item tonight includes Part 2 of the consolidated application, and in this part, we are advised of the categorical funding amounts that we will receive for this year, as well as it includes other required reports. Just for your information, I compared last year's application to this one because I was interested in seeing if there were any funding changes. And in our federal programs, those are all our Title I, Title II, Title III, and Title IV, we're actually down about $85,000, and most of that is a reduction in Title I and Title II funds. We went up a little bit in Title III, LEP, but that's because our English learner numbers have increased and that funding is based on that. As far as our state program goes, the one that's included in this application is Economic Impact Aid, and we're down about $14,000 in that one, so total compared to last year, we're down in our categorical funds about $100,000 or so. You've got the application there, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Chris?
I have a question, actually, for Mr. Miller.
Are these potentially part of the funds that will be cut from what we call our fair share of pain?
No, these are federal funds.
Did you turn it off?
These are Title I, Title II, Title III are federal funds. And EIA is a state categorical fund, but it has been protected in the past from any cuts to its funding on a discretionary basis by a school district. So we're presented with the EIA money. We're supposed to spend it for the purposes intended. We're not really allowed to give it back. Is that what you were asking?
Yes. Thank you very much. And just have one more follow-up. And I just want to say for just people who haven't had a chance to read this, the astonishing fact is that over 30% of the students in our district are free and reduced lunch.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I too had a question for Mr. Miller. I called today, and he gave me a great answer. As I was reviewing this, I was kind of like shocked because a lot of these programs have hundreds of thousands of dollars in carryover, and I was worried that our students weren't getting their fair share. And Mr. Miller explained to me that the federal funding is on a different cycle than we work on.
Yeah, that would be one of the issues, is that the federal year ends on September 30th, and our district year end is June 30th, so there's a difference in several months there. But if you look at the history, as Rita did, you'll see that those carryovers remain about the same. Some years they spend a little bit more, some years a little bit less, but you average it out, it's really close to those amounts as carryovers. So it's a matter of intent for program use at the school sites, and that's what they use the money for.
Okay, any public comment on this item?
Oh, I have a question.
Go ahead, Phil.
I saw with your Title IV funding, you guys are implementing second steps and steps to respect. What type of program is that?
These are, and oh, Jackie's gone, but they have to do with drug and alcohol awareness and education.
Does that replace DARE at all? Or?
No, it no, accents, that. It augments what we do there.
Okay.
If you wanted more detail, Jackie, Venica,
Dr. L. Frank,
Mr. Angel just had a question about the curriculum, okay. Like second steps to respect.
Steps to respect and second steps.
What is the question?
What type of program is that? I think Rita might answer it.
That's the alcohol, drug, tobacco.
Okay. Is it also bullying prevention, or
it does have a section in there for
excellent.
That as well.
Thank you,
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, if there's no further discussion, I guess that's your part. But I would move approval of item number 6.
I'll second that. Oh, unless you'd like to.
I'll second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Ms. Roger. Any further board discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you, Rita.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 7, approval of middle and high school course offerings for 2010-2011. That's probably why you didn't move from
right.
The podium. Go ahead.
Yes, every year we present these offerings for your approval for our upcoming school year. The list includes our recently approved new and modified courses and courses that have been previously approved. School staff consider student interests and needs as well as teacher qualifications and sections as they're determining what courses will be offered. And then, of course, what students sign up for also determines what classes will be held. And I bet you'll notice we have quite a variety. Every time I look at that, I think of how lucky our students are to have such a wide range of choices.
Any board questions? Discussion? Any public comment? Seeing none, let's see. What are you asking us to do tonight? Rita?
Approval, please.
Okay.
Would you like me to do that again?
Please.
I'd like to move that we approve the middle school and high school course offerings.
And I'll second.
Okay.
And any board discussion? Any public discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you, Regent.
Okay, thank you.
I hope we hang on to the variety and richness of our course offerings for a long time. All right, Marilyn. Certainly. Next on the agenda is number 8, is approval of a speech and language pathologist position. Jackie Kirk-Martinez is here.
Good evening. In your board agenda item, it shows that we currently, the San Luis Coastal School District, has 8.8 full-time equivalent speech and language pathologists. That is K-12. That does not include our preschool program. We currently have a 0.2, which is a one-day-a-week vacancy that our pathologists are assisting one another in trying to fill that vacancy so that there is not a service gap. However, it is very challenging for them. We have not been able to fill it this year. Speech and language pathologists, as one of your board members can attest to, is a very challenging position to fill. It is a unique position for speech and language services. Our students with IEPs require those services to develop their language as well as communication skills. We anticipate, we have several veteran speech and language pathologists, and we anticipate retirements or progressive retirements. We feel that this would be the time to look at our opportunities to potentially fly a vacancy, a full vacancy in addition to our 0.2 vacancy at this time, to try and get a pool of speech and language pathologists. We want to make this vacancy available and hopefully fulfill this before a service gap is inevitable. We want to make sure that we can implement every and all IEP services that are required. And so we ask the board to please consider adding at this time a 1.0 FTE.
Jackie, what did you mean by progressive retirements? Is it
staff are able to do an 80% progression as they begin to retire. The last 2 years of before they retire, they decrease their FTE equivalency, and we have had not formal notification from pathologists, but they are saying, oh, I'm looking at retirement in a year. I'm looking at retirement in a couple years, and they start decreasing their FTEs.
And we need to anticipate that.
Absolutely.
Mr. Unger, did you have any comments that you wish to make on the unique nature of speech pathologists?
What I would suggest is that any student out there who's looking for a fulfilling and lucrative career, consider the career of speech and language pathology. The vacancy rate among school professionals for that profession is very high. There are opportunities not only in schools but also in hospitals and other healthcare venues. That said, if we have to contract out for speech pathologists, which we would have to do if we can't have IEPs filled in other ways, it can cost upwards of $100 an hour for people that we don't really have a lot of control over. So I would move approval of item number 8.
I'll second it.
Okay. Thank you for the second. Go ahead, Mark.
Jackie, while I appreciate this concept, do you have something that you can tell us about? Is there a trend where we can show that we're going to need this in the near future, because this is to head off a gap?
Correct. And the seniority or the veteran pathologists, they're in our district.
So it's not an increasing number of students, a dramatic increase in the number of students.
We have incrementally increased, and with the rise in certain disabilities, there has been a significant increase. But with that, in anticipation of that, we also have the retirements and the shortage of speech pathologists.
And Jackie, if we approve this position, we're not going to have a speech pathologist sitting in a desk in an office with their feet up on the desk, twiddling their thumbs, waiting for work, are we?
I guarantee that will not happen.
Okay, thank you. Any that's a speech pathologist joke, isn't it? Any further board comment? Any member of the public like to address the board on this item? Okay, I think it's a terrific decision on our part. I know it's sticking our necks out there a little bit, but this is such an important, with due deference to my colleague and friend, this is the type of intervention in students' lives that just make amazing changes, and I think we should vote on it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. And next, we will move on to the revised board policy 5131, which is a student conduct board policy. This is the second reading. Dr.
Yes.
Matakovich?
Mr. Millar, we have before you a second reading of the conduct board policy, emphasizing prohibitive student conduct of sending to another student sexually explicit messages or pictures of self or others. We presented for a second reading because the board wanted more time to think about this. Mr. Unger surfaced an issue earlier stating that do we need stronger language stating that there must be an effect on the school climate. And we really feel that if you look at the first paragraph of the board policy, we're basically expecting students shall be expected to exhibit appropriate conduct that doesn't infringe upon the rights of others or interfere with the school program. And we feel that kind of is the umbrella statement for this prohibited student conduct. So I hope that this meets with your approval and you're able to move it forward.
Chris, are you okay with me?
Yeah, I'm just fine. I just wanted to make sure, in light of what we had heard, I think, at the last reading of this, concerns over what constituted an interference with the school program, and I think what you spoke to me about, too, was that the nuts and bolts of this, as always, will be found in the administrative regulations, and I'm comfortable with that. And so I'm good. Thank you very much.
Want to make a motion?
I will move approval of item number 9.
Second.
All right. Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Angel. Any board discussion? Any public input? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0. Moving on, Dr. Matakovich, to approval of revised board policy 6163.4, student use of technology, first reading.
Yes, in light of your action that you've just taken on the student conduct policy, we felt it was necessary to list this prohibitive behavior in this board policy so that there is a connection in terms of the student use of technology with this example. If you'll note at the bottom of page 10.2, we're saying such instruction shall include but not be limited to, and we wanted to add this item along with the examples to be absolutely sure and clear with our students what our expectations are. Reviewed it with the principals and with staff, and we feel it's important to have it noted here.
Yep. I think this is a great addition to this, and I appreciate it being updated. I was thinking, as long as we're making this change, if we could just add one word to help clarify both the second paragraph and then the paragraph on the back, where it says, shall notify students, and then on the second page, before using the district's online, each student and his parent guardian shall sign. If we could add the word annually to 10.3, before using the district's online resources, each student and his or her parent guardian shall annually sign, because I think that's the intent of the policy.
We do that.
What's our current practice? I know we haven't signed something annually, but...
Yes, yes, actually, there we have a card that the parent signs and the student that states that they have read our student handbook and all of our policies. Legal counsel has advised us that we need to pull out a separate agreement and have it particular to the student technology acceptable use agreement. So in the future, in this coming year, students and parents will sign a separate document indicating this. So the annual statement is our practice.
So that would be added to both, well, I guess, first of all, if it's our annual practice, do we need to add it? Is there some mention of that specifically in the administrative regulations that implement this board policy?
I don't know that.
I guess what I'm getting at is, if we need to make these changes, can we approve the policy with the changes that Mark mentioned, and therefore you don't have to bring it back to the board?
Oh, that would be great.
Okay. Is that all right with you, Mark? So we'd be adding annually to the first sentence in the second paragraph on 10.2, where it says superintendent or designee shall notify students and parents and guardians annually about authorized uses.
Yeah.
That's
great.
That's a great location.
And then tell me the other location.
No, that actually doesn't need to be. I don't personally feel it needs to be in there twice. So
okay.
I think that first reference.
All right. So everybody have an understanding of that change?
Months.
All right. Mr. Buckman, you want to move approval?
I'd like to move approval of the student use of technology board policy with the changes.
Come on, Catherine.
Okay.
Let's see. I want to share. Okay, any further board discussion or any public input? So, seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. And next, we go on to the process for selection of board appointee from Trustee Area 1. Dr. Valentine.
With the vacated seat created by Mr. Spadafore's departure, the board has chosen to make an appointment to fill that seat rather than hold a costly special election. The board appointed a subcommittee to spearhead the process by which that would occur. We've tried to provide the board with some of the technical background of this to the extent that the application process and the timelines and so forth that are needed, some suggestions for topics and so forth. But I think that I'll turn this over to the committee members and let them share thoughts with you and provide staff with direction.
The committee's asked me to report on what we've taken care of so far. It's our my understanding that our consensus that the process that we followed in the past has worked well, and we suggest that we continue with that if the rest of the board is in agreement. We are still working on reviewing the questions and possibly coming up with some new wording. And I believe we'll probably finish that long before we actually get into the night that we have to make our choice.
And if I could add, I think that the application deadline is February 16th. And it has to be, the board selection has to be completed by March the 5th. And as you know, I'll be out of district for a week. I don't know that that's necessary one way or the other in your process, but just for information.
What happens if we don't approve it by March 5th? I mean, is there a consequence?
County superintendent has to call a special election.
Okay. All right. Well, we definitely don't want to do that. I guess, you know, I have to tell you, in the past, it's been a very uncomfortable process, but that may be unavoidable. And I'm just wondering whether we wanted to have a little bit more of a head start on the process in case, I mean, I don't know. Chris, you've been through a number of these. I hate to have our backs against the deadline that's going to take it out of our hands.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess as soon after whatever Mrs. Holmes would support, since she's really our expert at it, but the sooner we can jump on this, I think the better. And plus, having a six-person board it presents some other problems, I think, in terms of our legislative duties. So,
yeah. I'm not sure that the superintendent's essential to the process. Just has to live with the outcome.
I'm not going to argue with you.
I know, and I know why. So, I mean, I'd be okay with going forward. Is the 23rd a meeting night, Kim?
The calendar is in your board packet as the attachment to the minutes of December 15th.
Okay.
It's the 2nd and the 16th of the February meetings.
The deadline for the applications is the 16th, so that's not doable.
And the real question is, would you hold a special meeting for this one item?
I don't think so. Go ahead, Chris.
Which of those meetings is on the coast?
Normally, the second meeting of the month is the one that we've moved out. At this point of the year, I have not committed to those locations. So, and even if we had, we always have the flexibility to move something if that's your direction
I
at any time.
If we're looking at the 16th, I would just want to make sure that it was that the meeting was in town here, not on the coast.
Well, I would interject that the question you need to consider is your interview process something that you can accommodate within a regular meeting's agenda, or do you want to devote a special meeting to that?
Well, I think part of that also, though, depends on how many people,
right?
How many people we have apply for the position. If there are just a couple of people, that's a lot different than the last time when Catherine ran the gauntlet and there were, what, about six or seven people.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Millar was speaking about the awkwardness of this process. I think if you can get started on your interviews immediately after those applications are received, maybe you can consider a two-step process so that you wouldn't be forced into making a decision the night of the interview. You could hold the interviews and take action at a separate meeting.
I would love to figure out a way to do that. Mark, go ahead. I see you down there.
Also, as somebody that's been on both sides of this, having come forward and for an appointment and then getting elected and trying to appoint somebody, I would tend to favor trying to do this as a meeting by itself without other things on the agenda.
Go ahead.
And I would just in sort of support of that statement, it's unpredictable what a regular meeting may or may not contain. I'd hate to see one of our marathon meetings include something that really requires pretty focused attention.
So are we talking about maybe a special meeting on February 23rd? Okay, it might be a really short meeting. We don't know. Okay, I think I favor that as well. Is that all right with the other board members? Okay. Okay.
Should I put it down?
Phil, you all right with that? Okay.
Could I add one further suggestion?
Indeed.
Since we have a meeting on February 16th, which is your deadline, the administration could report to you that evening the status of candidacy. And maybe you could make a final decision that night over the practicality. If for some reason we come up with a single candidate, maybe that will change the course of your approach.
Then we would bring it forward at the March 2nd meeting and just do it within the normal agenda of the meeting, as opposed to having to hold a special. Okay, we'll put a place marker for February 23rd, and we'll evaluate the number. Catherine and I, in conjunction with Ed, will evaluate the number of applications and make a recommendation to the rest of the board as to whether or not we need a special meeting. Okay, excellent.
Mr. President, I'm perfectly okay with all of that. I'm thinking also from a candidate standpoint, if there could be a date certain when the interview was going to take place, everybody involved can then plan accordingly. If we say 1 week that the interview is the next two, anyway, you know what I'm saying.
Okay, so we should decide to have the meeting on the 23rd, then if it ends up that we don't really need to have the meeting, let's say we get one applicant.
Well, if you get one applicant, you still have to have a meeting.
And, right, and but we could do it. We could cancel the special meeting, roll it over into the regular board meeting of March 2nd.
Or we could have a cake on the 23rd. And just
my argument on that would be that even if it's one candidate, there's a there's a 15 or 20 minute interview process. There is a deliberation amongst the board about what the board wants to do. If that's embedded in the middle of a 3-hour meeting, is that the board's? As long as you consider that that's the possibility, is that the ideal situation the board would like to see, or have an evening where all we're going to think about is who our next board members are?
Okay, and then I assume we would want AGP to be recording that meeting too. I think it's important the public has a chance to view, even if they may not, how we go about replacing Mr. Spadafore. So, as I understand it, we're going to have a special meeting on the 23rd, which we will devote solely to the selection of an appointee and I guess any other district business that needs to be dealt with in an expeditious way. Okay. All right. Make it so. Number one. Let's see. This is this will do the action consent agenda. Please let me know which items you would like pulled, if any. Action 12, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 13, acceptance of donations. 14, disposition of surplus property. 15, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 16, approval of purchase orders. 17, approval of warrants and payroll. 18, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. Okay, seeing no one or having no items pulled, I will entertain a motion on items 12 through 18. All right, I'll move for approval of items 12 through 18.
And I'll be the big second.
Thank you, Mark. Moved by the chair, seconded by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Passes 5-0. Well done, board. And now we move on to advanced agenda items. Let's see. Go ahead, Mark.
If the board would be so nice as to let me make two suggestions. One, after reviewing the past agenda, I'd like to get my pen back. I've got another. I'd like us to consider adding some stronger language to the strategic plan regarding mathematics. Tonight we discussed the possibility of adding extended day activities, so before we do that, I'd like to look at adding a stronger language to support mathematics in the district.
I believe we had a strategic plan update specific to closing the achievement gap in math coming up. Is that?
We did provide an overview for you relative to our math performance, and we have a K-12 committee in place that is studying mathematics and how we have an articulated program. But certainly having it be part of the strategic plan process in terms of an emphasis is at the board's pleasure.
Well, I guess I'm recalling a conversation, and now that I think about it, it was I'm not sure that anything was settled, but my thought was that the issue with math and the achievement gap is just as critical as the English language achievement gap, and that I would like to see at least a discussion of having that goal is on par with the English language gap. I'm not sure that we do it through an agenda item, other than if the agenda item should be review of the strategic plan, and could be a review with a specific area of focus. So is that like the spring review?
Yeah, it would come forward in the spring. We have added specific objectives in the past, independent of that, and would do so again. It is, in fact, a district emphasis. It is embedded in the notion of closing the achievement gap, and frankly, staff would welcome a formalization of that.
Okay. How do we go? What's the best way to go about it?
Well, I just was going to comment that
we haven't updated, well, we've updated the strategic plan, but we haven't gone through the goals for strategic planning and all that since 2005. And how many of us were on the board in 2005? Huh. At November 1st, 2005, on second page of the strategic plan?
We've had other updates of items in there.
But we haven't looked at the whole plan.
Okay.
So I was wondering when we do that. Sorry.
Let's do that.
Let's do that. There you go. Can we bring that forward in the spring, in April, in conjunction with the budget building plan? Or?
Yeah, we may, if the board is open to the idea, we may bring it forward sooner than that. Maybe, well, March. I mean, I guess March is spring, isn't it?
Okay. No, I by all means think sooner rather than later is good. Mark, is that
If we're going to redo the strategic plan, I think it's fine. I think that a five-year shelf life on a strategic plan is pushing it. I would agree. Some of the things in the strategic plan now are very specific that we've already taken care of, and the world has changed so much since this plan was written, just the budget part of it and things in the district, that I think it's probably time to really take a look at writing a new strategic plan.
Well, I don't disagree with anything you said. I just would hate to leave the apprehension in the mind of the public that somehow we have not revisited the strategic plan since 2005. We basically revisit it every time we do the budget. So we haven't left it on the shelf somewhere gathering dust. But I do think a top-to-bottom review is a healthy thing, we should pursue it in March time frame. Sounds good to me.
Okay. I think we might want to look at this as a future agenda item before that and talk about the process. Is it going to be a review, or is it going to be a strategic plan approach where we involve the community and we involve the staff and we look at this as a whole? I also have another future agenda item.
I know, but let's hang on.
If I could interject on that, the strategic plan is reviewed annually by a variety of constituencies. The curriculum council, which is largely teachers, the management team, the PTA, PTO presidents provide input to it, and this year we're meeting with every single site council, every single site council rep to the strategic plan. So it's being reviewed and revised to the degree that people feel that a change is necessary in the direction of the school district every single year. Our intent in this particular process is that we really want to go to the folks that have the greatest investment in what's happening in our sites, whether it's parents or whether it's teachers or whether it's management personnel, who have been processing the goals and the direction of their various corners of the school district to bring that forward. We've kind of self-consciously, and again, the board can direct us in a different direction, but we've kind of self-consciously chosen that in lieu of sort of a mass meeting where we just bring together a bunch of people who may or may not have been on board.
Chris?
As I recall, the strategic planning process was time-consuming in a good way. I'm uncomfortable with us entertaining the thought at this point of redoing the strategic plan. What I would rather have us do is review the current strategic plan and see what's necessary and see whether, in fact, we do need to have a top-to-bottom remake of it. I guess what I'm asking for is to take this a little bit more incrementally over the spring. I'm also concerned about what might happen on the state level, and I'm concerned about what the new federal regulations, you know, we've got the new Elementary and Secondary Education Act coming up for review this year, actually, hopefully, legislative action this year in Washington, D.C. I think there's a lot out there, and I just think there's a lot for us to consider before we leap headfirst into a new strategic planning process. So I would ask that we take this very slowly and really look at what we've got and look at what our needs might be for the future.
Mr. Blair. I think, Chris, you've captured what I was, my intent, and I appreciated what I was asking for and am still asking for is the possibility of a future agenda item where we could accomplish the goals that you just outlined.
I think an important piece of this particular topic is our strategic plan is an evolving document that isn't a normal strategic plan. We don't have a body of thoughts that have to go forward, and then in 5 years it has a shelf life, as Mark said. And what we do is every year update according to the priorities that the governments give us, the monies that we have, and the resources we want to allocate on the needs that we perceive. It's a growing and evolving process each time based upon what we need to do and the board perceives.
If I might add to that, I think all of that would come out in the review that Mark and Chris have suggested, and I really welcome that opportunity to share with you the depth of things that go on annually. It's not a static document. In fact, one of the things we take great pride in is what an active piece of thought in the district with budget behind it and the opportunity to change it, provide it over and over and over again, so that we're very confident we're very, very close to the center of gravity of our school district.
And I'd like to, as a veteran of the previous strategic planning process, it really was the tying budget dollars to the strategic plan that was a sea change for our district to the better. Okay. Mark, you have another
one? Yeah, I do. And just the last thing being with four new board members, it might be this idea to truly go through this and winnow it and look at it is going to be great. The other thing that I would ask for is a future agenda item that the county Children's Services Network, which is the top-ranking folks in the county, have just completed a one-year look at truancy and dropouts in the county, and they have a presentation that they've been taking through the communities. I know Chris just recently was presented it. I saw it the day that it was first released at a group meeting, and it's very powerful. And I'd like to suggest that the board agendize having an opportunity to watch this presentation.
And I would support that as well.
Dr. Matakovich, I can't remember the details, but there was some ongoing work being done in the area of truancy and SARB by the district. Where are we? Am I recalling that correctly?
Yes, you're recalling an earlier conversation that we had. We have received the report, and our administrators are in the process of reviewing the recommendations that have come out of the report. We have a meeting on the 28th to do exactly that. There are a series of 12 recommendations coming out of this overview. We would like the opportunity, some time to work with it ourselves, and certainly I've spoken with John Alfers, and he's available to give his presentation. I've asked him if he would participate with the conversation with our secondary administrators primarily, and we'd like to come back to you with him. He's certainly available to present our take in terms of a response to this report.
In what time frame?
Well, if you could give us a month, that would be great.
I don't know how we can avoid it. So, okay. Mark?
I'm sorry. I think what we're looking for, and if Chris is willing to wait a month and Phil's willing to wait a month, I'll wait a month. I think the board seeing the presentation and getting that background will make it easier for the staff to bring forward their recommendations because we'll have a better understanding. Mary, is what you're suggesting is that the presentation from the county be done in conjunction with your presentation?
Yes, please.
Okay. I would be worried about the length of that, but I'm fine with waiting a month.
Okay. I'd like to see the If we're going to do the presentation, I'd like to have a report by our own staff regarding the same subject matter. Okay. And so Catherine and I will get together with Ed and figure out the appropriate dates within the time frame that we've discussed on both this issue and on the issue of the strategic plan review. Catherine?
I'm just checking to see if anyone else feels the need to schedule a follow-up to the presentation today by Mrs. Frost and Mr. Elfrink and Dr. Matakovich, so we are in a position to implement this program in the spring for extended day, if possible. So I don't know how everyone feels. Does this need to be agendized?
You know, I don't know that that's something that the board needs to agendize. I would be comfortable with the board clerk and the president adding that to the list of things for following up, and that works for me.
Okay. Thank you.
And my understanding is that the two middle schools are going to look at implementing a pilot program for the coming next year. And then the broader review about the strategic priorities and that type of thing will take place later. Okay. So my sense is that we don't need an agenda item at this point. Okay. Okay. Any other advanced agenda items anybody wants to bring forward? Seeing no one, let's see. What do we got left here? Report by board members.
Yes, and I just was fortunate enough last week to be able to appear on a panel discussion up in Santa Cruz County with John Laird, who was a former assemblyman for the Santa Cruz area and who I believe is interested in running for state senate in our area, and Rick Pratt from CSBA to talk about the state of the budget, the state of the state budget, the fiscal crisis and the impact on schools in all of our areas, but focusing on Santa Cruz County, it was really interesting. Hopefully everybody got a chance to see the CSBA webcast last Thursday on the state budget. If you didn't, I would invite you really to take a look at the CSBA website and go ahead and review it. Very interesting information about what the state budget looks like and could look like for about the next 5 years. Some really powerful presenters, including Christopher Thornburg, who is probably the best-known California economist these days and who was the one that accurately predicted the terrible mess our economy is in right now, not only implications for our school district, but I think implications for all of us personally as well. It was very interesting.
I wanted to congratulate the students and teachers over at Laguna Junior High. I was invited, not knowing what I was getting into, to be a judge at their Nobel Prize Awards, and I was absolutely blown away by the depth of knowledge and the presentations that the students did, to the point that I'd love to have the winners come here, but I'm not sure we have the time. I also wanted to say that, piggyback on what Chris is saying, we are entering the new budget season, and as Mr. Miller said, we are probably facing some more devastating cuts. One of the interesting situations that happened last year and the year before was when I was up in Sacramento, the legislators kept saying, but we haven't heard from the parents. We're not hearing anything from the parents. And I'm really urging the public to this year get involved much sooner than when the board needs to discuss their budget, because by then it's too late. We need to have our voice heard up in Sacramento when they're deciding how much money they're going to send down to us. And so, again, it's much too late when it's down at the board level. Thanks.
Okay. Seeing no one else, let's move into adjournment. And nice job, everybody. It was a crowded agenda, and you did well. Thank you.